ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi there. This is Greg.
As long as you didn't get behind in your work, you basically had a day off to yourself. It was billed as an opportunity to get all that life admin done, to keep your weekends. It was really well received.
If you could get all of your work done in fewer days, but with the same pay, would you be keen to give it a crack? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong with ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. The shorter working week is back on the agenda as the Launceston City Council is in the process of offering a four-day week at the same pay to their employees. But where do you even start in order to make this work? And what lessons have we learned from those organisations who've already tried it? John Hopkins is a professor of management at Deakin Business School and one of Australia's leading experts in flexible work research. G'day, John.
Hi, Lisa. Great to be here.
Anne Rayner is the founder of a business that, amongst other things, helps organisations design and implement the four-day week. G'day, Anne.
Hi, Lisa.
John, happy 100th. We are marking a centenary in 2026 when it comes to shorter working hours. Tell us about this.
Yes, we are. It is the centenary this year since Ford first moved from a six-day week to a five-day week. And at the time, that was seen as something that was extraordinary and unusual. And of course, that's what's become the norm and what we still accept as a kind of typical normal week, even today. But obviously, 100 years is a long time. A lot's happened since then. Just before I came on today, I was actually looking at a little bit of data about the 1920s. And I was wondering whether you knew what the life expectancy was in the 1920s of an Australian.
Oh, shall we say 60 years?
Very close. So it's 59 for men and 63 for women. And of course, there were very few women in the workforce back then. It was a couple of decades later when women really came into the workforce during World War II and after that. So we're looking at a period 100 years ago when Australia and the rest of the world looked very different than it does today. Yet the way we work is very similar. We're still working 5 days a week. And if anything, we're working more hours because of the technologies that we've got today. We don't just leave work and forget about it until we return to work the next day. Of course, we're always available and always on 24/7.
So I'm hearing that there is a need to keep on reassessing this. Why do we find it so hard to go back and look at things, John?
Yeah, look, it's a divisive topic for sure. And I think since the pandemic, organisations and governments are far more open to conversations about changing the way we work. You know, working from home for many of us was a dream before the pandemic, and it really didn't happen. It wasn't accessible to many workers. And of course, a lot more workers now have access to hybrid work arrangements and the ability to work from home before they did then. And I suppose the four-day week is another part of that conversation. It's about improving working conditions for workers. And it's certainly a conversation that isn't going away.
And in your experience working at the coalface of this, with organisations that are trying to redesign their working week to make it shorter, what is underpinning this? What's driving this need?
I think we're seeing more organisations realising that we're getting to a breaking point, and there is this constant pressure to do more with less, but we're also seeing the highest levels of burnout that we've ever seen, and it's increasing fast. Somewhere around one in two Australians have experienced burnout. So people, all of us know, are experiencing it. And I think organisations are starting to realise that we've got to find a better way. There's still going to be pressure to deliver. That will always happen. But how can we do that without burning out the very people that we need in order to deliver?
John, so this has been bubbling along as something that's been trialled, but we're talking about it right now because the employees of the Launceston City Council will vote soon on the move. It's the proposed four-day week. The Australian Services Union is behind it as well. What's the backstory for Launceston City Council contemplating this?
The backstory is really around burnout. It's really around high staff turnover, and it's around high sickness levels. So a couple of years back, we interviewed 15 Australian companies who've already moved to the four-day week, and they all had different motivations for doing so. But the most common themes were really around burnout, poor work-life balance for their employees, high turnover, so difficulty in keeping hold of staff, but also difficulty in attracting staff. So without knowing the full details of what's happening behind the scenes at Launceston, certainly based on what's been said in the media already, this would definitely fall into that profile. Burnout has certainly been mentioned. Staff attrition has been mentioned. So this is seen as a way of tackling that. And, you know, in terms of how we tackle problems in the workforce, we either change the conditions or we throw money at it. And of course, with something like burnout, you know, you pay somebody a higher salary, it doesn't change the burnout, you know? So I think it's a sensible approach, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Now, there has been international research on this for quite a long time, a lot of it being guided by a New Zealand organisation, 4-Day Week Global. What are the findings overall when it comes to improving worker wellbeing, John?
Yeah, so 4-Day Week Global, that was really, that was born from a book by Andrew Barnes. So he was the founder of that company originally. And they've done research all over the world and partner with a lot of universities and a lot of other institutions, and largely productivity either remains the same or actually improves when you drop hours. And that completely aligns with the research that we've done. So of those 15 companies that we interviewed back in, I think it's between 2023 and 2024, none of those reported having any reduction in productivity when they moved to a 4-day week. So they either said that it stayed around the same. I think 9 out of the 15 said it stayed around the same. And the other 6 said that productivity actually went up. It's strange, but when we asked what were the challenges that you faced, what were the obstacles that you faced, they said that it was really that cynicism around how can you get more work done in less hours? You know, that seems to be the main obstacle that they needed to overcome to get to where they wanted to be. But of course, time isn't the only input that's directly correlated what the output's going to be like. Otherwise, we'd all be working 7 days a week. We know that if you're working too often, you're going to get sick more, you're going to get tired, your performance is going to drop off, safety is going to drop off. So there's all kinds of jobs. If you're working longer hours, you're not going to get any more productive after a certain point. And I suppose up to now, we've kind of accepted that the perfect ratio is 5 days of work and 2 days of rest. So what the 4-day week is doing, and there's no science bit to say that that's necessarily true either. So what the 4-day week is doing is testing that and seeing that whether or not 4 days at work and 3 days rest is actually better for overall performance and productivity than 5 days of work and 2 days of rest.
Let's hear Greg's story now. He worked for a business that adopted a shorter fortnight rather than a week.
So my employer introduced a 9-day fortnight. So every 2 weeks you'd get a day off. Normally, most people took it as a Friday, although it didn't have to be. But importantly, it wasn't a right to disconnect. So you couldn't go away and not be contacted. If you wanted to do that, you were expected to take a leave day. It was billed as an opportunity to get all that life admin done, to keep your weekends weekends. It was really well received by most of the staff that I spoke to, did wonders for staff morale. So yeah, I say bring it on. I didn't take all the days which were perhaps open to me just because I was busy. So I think in the end, in my year there, I probably took about half, but it was just great to know that you had it up your sleeve.
Anne, what are your thoughts on Greg's story?
I think it's not just about getting all your normal work done, because that's really asking people just to run faster in the time that they've got. I think where we really see the impact of a shorter work week is where the constraint of time forces us to look at how we work and what we work on and find ways to do that better. And I think, you know, those 6 organisations that actually saw productivity improve that you were talking about, John, what would have happened is it was a catalyst to look at what they were working on and how they were working and find ways to do it better. And I think that's the magic of the 4-day week.
One of the big pushbacks, Anne, of this approach, and many of the business councils are really concerned about this is that instead of helping with burnout, they're saying that actually it could have the opposite effect because work intensification, as you're saying, people actually trying to do more in less time, rushed decision making, trying to fit everything into 4 days instead of five, for example. How might you work with that usually and that type of pushback?
I think it's really important to talk about that fear. And what I would say to organizations looking at this is do the planning first. So where I've seen a four-day week not deliver the benefits that the organization hoped is where they sort of said, okay, starting on Monday, everyone gets to take the day off, figure it out as you go along. And that's where you do end up with a lot of chaos and a lot of pressure, and it can feel more stressful than what it should. What you should do is do all the planning first. So do a productivity audit and identify where are the things that are stopping us from delivering our outcomes efficiently that we need to look at? Where are the opportunities for us to be more productive? What are the tasks that we're doing that we don't necessarily need to do? And going through that process together as an organization takes the onus from an individual figuring it out as they go along to a team-wide or organization-wide collective change in how time is valued and how we do things around here. And I think that's where you see the upside and the real lifestyle and productivity benefits of a four-day week.
John, do you have anything to add here?
It's not a case of just, hey, everybody, we're off from Fridays from now on. It really has to be planned. It has to be piloted. It has to be tested. And in terms of the organizations that we interviewed, it was really strategically planned out. And they definitely did. They I don't think they called it a productivity audit, but that's a great way to describe it. They looked at the type of workflow that they currently had. And as well as moving from a five-day week to a four-day week, they used it as an exercise to trim away work that was not adding value. And, you know, that was different for each organization, but probably comes as no surprise that the word we heard over and over again was meetings. It was an exercise in looking at the type of work they had, and it was decided by most of the organization we spoke to that we either had too many meetings, the meetings we have are too long, they're too frequent, or too many people are involved. So that was really a case of, well, let's start with that and see where we can trim away hours. So it's not just a case of moving from 38 hours down to 32. It's also a combination of reduction in hours, but also reduction in the amount of work that isn't adding or isn't contributing to the organization.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and I'm speaking with Professor of Management from Deakin University, John Hopkins, and Anne Rayner, founder of The Productivity Bargain. How long do you think it takes to prepare the ground for the four-day week? Keep listening to find out. You might be surprised. In addition to the concepts that we've been talking about, there is one point that I picked up from Greg's story, that the day off a fortnight, it just wasn't a given. It had to be earned. And friend of the program, Dr. Amantha Imber from Inventium, wrote about her experience of their trial of a four-day week and what she learned. And one of the important points that she mentions is it should be a gift, not an entitlement. In fact, they call it gift of the fifth. Anne, do you want to comment on that?
That concept of the reciprocal responsibility or reciprocal arrangement is literally why I called my company the Productivity Bargain, because this idea of the bargain is essentially saying to people, if you can find a way to deliver your outcomes in less time, you get to keep that time. That is so incredibly motivating and unlocks this creative problem solving that all of us have. If you say to people, you know, are there things stopping you delivering your outcomes? Most people will say, like, okay, how long have you got? And so it really is empowering to people to be told, if, you know, if you can find a way to solve some of these challenges and we'll back you in doing that, then you get to keep that time. And the reciprocal is really important, as Amantha Imber was saying. If they can't or don't deliver the outcomes in less time, they don't get to take that time, that because they haven't created it. And I think that's a really important concept, going back to your question around the fears of business groups around, you know, how is this going to work? Is it going to damage the business in any way? I think that bargain idea that you get the time if you create the time is actually the central concept that we need to kind of keep at the heart of everything, because that is the way that we make sure the outcomes of the business are still delivered.
John?
In terms of the way that the four-day week or the benefits of the four-day week may be prolonged in a longer term, I think it's important that it needs to be seen as a gift and not something that you just get no matter how well you perform. And I think at this point, it's probably worth mentioning that there are different types of four-day week. What we're largely talking about now is what Andrew Barnes called the 180-100 model, which is 100% pay for 80% of the hours in return for 100% of productivity. So we're moving from 5 days to 4 days. So we're moving from 100% of the hours to 80% of the hours. The pay is going to stay the same, but the productivity has to stay the same as well. So that was definitely a message that we heard throughout all our interviews. And in terms of beyond the pilot, and, you know, obviously it's easier for employees to work hard for a 6-month pilot because they want to get a 4-day week. But will that incentive drop off a year, 2 years down the track? And I think keeping it aligned with targets, KPIs, whatever measurements that those organizations use to measure the productivity and output of workers is certainly a way of maintaining the benefits of the 4-day week, or maintaining that level of productivity despite dropping a day. That's a way of maintaining it in the longer term.
In the Australian Financial Review, Innes Willicks of the Australian Industry Group is reported as saying that a national 4-day week would take our productivity back a quarter of a century. What's your response to that view, John?
Yeah, as I mentioned at the very start of the interview, this is a very divisive idea. And I don't think everybody in this country is going to move from a 5-day week to a 4-day week overnight. I think if it was going to happen, it would be a gradual thing. And we'd see, organisations have already done it. So this has already started. And not just in Australia, but certainly around the world. And you're always going to have people opposed to those ideas. There are people who are going to be sceptical of it, who maybe not have done it themselves, not spoken to people who've done it, and maybe they just don't believe the results.
John, what are the unique challenges for a council or government organisation implementing this?
Yeah, I like the expression unique challenge, because every organisation we spoke to had unique challenges. And that's why a pilot or a trial is so important. And I would say at least 6 months and probably even 12 months is a good pilot to have. You can start small. It's not like everyone in the organisation, you know, suddenly starts working 4 days a week. And during that pilot, that 6 to 12 months, those unique challenges will come out. And that will be based. And even looking at Launceston, there are 600 people involved or will be impacted by this decision. And the different types of job roles that they have are very different as well. So I saw transport was mentioned and cleaning streets, and there'll be a lot of office-based jobs in there as well. Each one of those will have a unique problem as well. So I can't even begin to guess what the unique problems will be that they will face, but there will be unique problems, and hopefully they will come out in the trial, and then they can iterate the program, learn from those challenges, and hopefully move forward.
And can we go through that roadmap that you created in order to implement a 4-day week? What are the key parts of that process?
So I'd say there's two kind of critical things that you can't skip. It starts with defining your vision and goals with an outcome lens, not an input lens. So when we think about work, we're very used to thinking about it in terms of inputs. So this is things like billable hours or chargeability. It's things like the tasks that we have to complete, projects that we're doing. And these are actually input measures, not outcome measures. What actually determines the success of the business is the outcomes. The other big thing, as we alluded to earlier, is a productivity audit. From there, we prioritize. So that can feel really overwhelming when you do the audit and you go, oh my goodness, there are so many places that we can find productivity savings. It's really energizing for people. They suddenly get it and go, oh, I can see how we can deliver our outcomes in less time now. There are so many opportunities. But it can also feel quite overwhelming. And so then prioritizing them so that you just focus on 3 to 5 to start with that are going to unlock the biggest impact is a really important part.
And how much time do you need before kickoff to do the audit, et cetera?
The right amount of time really depends on the size of organization, how much bandwidth people have to focus on getting the right answers and doing the solutioning, and also what are the solutions that you are going to implement and how big of a task is that? So I've seen people, you know, very quickly go from, I don't know if this can work, to great, okay, let's go. And I've also worked with organizations where that has stretched out longer because they need to bring people along with them on the journey because they go, oh, we're just so busy, we don't have time to focus on this. And I say, well, that's why you need this. So aim for 6 to 8 weeks. That's a good enough time to do proper planning, really dive into what are the productivity unlocks, but paced with enough kind of breathing space in between to reflect, get everyone ready to go so that when you do make the change and you all together take that day off, everybody knows how to what their new way of working is going to look like.
John, you've been listening to Anne. Do you have any builds or any takes on anything that she shared?
That stakeholder support is so important. Definitely organisations that we spoke to, and there were a real range of organisations. So everything from, I mentioned a recruitment company before, we spoke to a logistics firm, a design company. But the one thing that they all shared was that they had a champion at the head of it. So the planning, the getting that stakeholder support, getting people on side. So clear messaging around, why are we doing this? So what is the motivation for doing this? So like I mentioned, it could be any of those problems. You know, we're having high staff turnover. We don't want high staff turnover. We want our staff to be happier. Even in this era of AI and technology, our humans, our workers are still the greatest resource that we have. So we want to look after them. You know, we want them to stay longer. We want them engaged. We want them to work hard and enjoy themselves. You know, we are humans at the end of the day. We're not robots. We're probably a little bit up and down. You don't just turn us on one day and we work at exactly the same rate every day, all day. So the way that we look after our workforce has a direct input on productivity. We mentioned productivity a lot today, and the way that we treat our staff and the ability and the capacity of our staff to do good work and be engaged and stay at the organization has a huge correlation with the overall productivity of the firm.
This move by Launceston City Council has certainly raised the discussion around the four-day week, I've noticed. So do you see more four-day weeks coming to councils and other organizations in Australia then, John?
What councils and governments have the opportunity and capacity to do is to take the four-day week to more people more quickly. So if this does happen, so if the vote goes ahead and it's voted in and they do try and it is a success, and other councils will, I'm certain, will look at it, certainly if they're having or encountering the same problems that Launceston are having, and I'd imagine that would be quite common in most councils and governments, I think it would be almost certainty that other councils will follow suit.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you. My pleasure.
John Hopkins is a professor of management at Deakin Business School and one of Australia's leading experts in flexible work research. Anne Rayner is the founder of a business that helps organisations design and implement the four-day week. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong, Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.